Yo.
There's certain things that I can talk to you about that I can't really with my dad.
I don't think we should talk about this.
Hi, I'm Lynn of Long Ago, Lynn and Jen. Let's talk about sex. And now we have a new group that we're really working together with, and we're talking about sexual matters. This new focus is on shades of abuse. This is our second discussion, really conversation about it. And today, Soy and Valerie and I are all going to be talking about sexual grooming. And in general, how grooming is used to sexually abuse and take advantage of others. So how are you doing today, Soy and Valerie?
Morning, everyone. I am doing okay. I'm a little out of it because I just came back from Colorado yesterday, actually. So a little tired, but I'm here and I'm excited and also sad to talk about this topic, but it's really needed. How are you, Valerie?
I'm doing good. I got back from a trip earlier this week, so I'm finally recovering from all my sleepiness, my post-vacay sleepiness. But yeah, I am happy that we're all able to get together and talk about this because this is something super interesting. And once you see it, you can really see it in many different forms. So yeah, so grooming, the basic definition of it is that grooming is an action of a pedophile for preparing a child for abuse, basically. So it's someone that is targeting, in this first instant, we're going to be talking about a child being sexually abused and what that sort of entails.
Well, maybe, as you said, Valerie, you know, we need a basic definition out there of grooming. And, grooming is really much more than people think it is, but it's the vital tool that allows abusers to do what they do. So understanding it, I think, is super important. And basically, abusive people are people in power who use their power to establish a relationship, a close relationship with a child or a person with less power. So it can be with other adults. It can be with family members. It can be with parents of a child. It can be the other teachers of a child. But this abusing person is really establishing this relationship, taking more power so that they can engage in unhealthy sexual activity. And sometimes not only unhealthy sexual, but unhealthy violent, unhealthy abusive activity. So it is an overarching definition. I think what really surprised me, what I've learned about grooming over the years, is that groomers, abusers groom themselves to believe that their behavior is totally normal, and to normalize it. And in abusing others and grooming others, they're trying to normalize their abusive behavior. So they start with children, let's keep this secret. You're a wonderful person. You're the best little friend I've ever had. They give on average 5 times more compliments than neutral sayings to a child. So it's a heavily complimented overture. And then with the parents, same thing. You're wonderful parents. You've got a great child. The other teachers, same thing. You're a great teacher. You can help me. So the grooming process is really aimed by an individual, an abuser, at others so they can engage in this unhealthy activity, which they've probably been groomed into. You and I've talked about, Soy, many abusers have really been groomed into this pattern of relating to people. So that gives us an overarching definition. It's really abusive power through relationships that are then kept secret and threatened. So it's really very successful tool.
Yeah, and something, I've mentioned earlier, which I think we see a lot too, is are some of those backhanded compliments, like the no one will ever love you like I do, almost trying to make the person or the child feel special, but in some ways also kind of isolating and degrading them by saying they're maybe not lovable enough, or insinuating that by saying things like that. And I think that happens to parents too. And it's really easy to miss, especially when you've already gained the trust of the people. So I think there's that subtle step there that I think can be easily missed if you're not looking out for those things, unfortunately.
You're pointing out one of the big red flags, that it's you're so special, your child is so special. That's why I'm spending all this time with your child. But also in abusive domestic relationships, the abuser tells the partner they're abusing often, you're so special, only you can be with me, only you understand me. You know, you are so perfect. So it's that over complimenting, you know, and really not accurately reporting that draws the other person in. The other thing, Valerie, maybe you could say something about the book you're holding.
Oh, yes. So we
which is about this process.
It is. This is a really, it's a book, a children's book called Some Secrets Should Never Be Kept. And it's beautifully illustrated. And it's this very simple story of a child who gets tickled by a man and is told, don't tell anyone about the tickling. And then the tickling escalates into more inappropriate touching. And this child ends up being sexually abused and ends up being brave and coming forward and telling his mother. And the mother is able to protect him. And the child is able to ask questions and they can have a conversation about it. So this is a very, you know, uplifting story, as positive as I think a sexual abuse situation can be. But I think it's super important to show children there is a way out of this, and you can live a life and be okay after sexual abuse, and that it's okay to talk about. And yeah, it's obviously heartbreaking to think that a child has to go through this, but then even more important to have the parents be able to have these discussions with their children. So at the end of the book, there's some questions for parents, caregivers, and educators that ask questions such as, should Alfred have told his mother straight away? Should anyone tickle or touch your private parts? If they do, what should you do straight away? So it's asking the questions when a situation like this does happen, because unfortunately it does, and it's not going away anytime soon, which is very sad, but why we all do the work that we do. But it is sort of this, very complex issue, but geared towards children. So it is very simplified in a way that children can understand this very complicated matter.
Who wrote the book, Valerie?
This is a book by Janine Sanders, and it's illustrated by Craig Smith.
Yeah, the pictures are also, I think, really helpful for children, because I've used it with kids in the office. Yeah. And it's really been helpful, you know, to tell a story in as positive a way as it can be told, really.
And I also want to throw out there, because I know that I've heard this a lot when I've been working with people who have been impacted by sexual violence, is that it does feel like the burden or the responsibility of aftercare, or even through a legal process, feels like it's their responsibility, and almost feels like, and part of that means it's their fault. But like, I feel like it's super important to make the distinction that, like, no, it's certainly not the responsibility of the survivors or their significant others to make the person who hurt them stop. And it is unfortunate that the burden falls on them for the aftercare and just care for themselves throughout the process. But the sole responsibility is for the person who has hurt. And unfortunately, it's hard, right, in our society to make someone else accountable unless through legal, you know, legal ways. And that's not always successful either. So I just wanted to make the distinction, because I didn't want anyone to feel like it's my fault. Is it my responsibility? No, it certainly is not.
That, I think, is such an important point, Zoe, because I think so many who've been abused, you know, the abusers don't just abuse one person. They abuse a lot of people, and they feel responsible for all of those others if they haven't been able to speak out. And I think what you're saying is so important. Ideally, you speak out. Ideally, you help yourself by doing that. And ideally, you help others. But that is not possible for many, many people. Yesterday, I saw a man abused at 9 years old for 2 years by his fourth and fifth grade teacher every day, and didn't speak out until about 2 months ago, when he was listening to a program on a podcast, actually, about it. And then he realized that the teacher who abused him decades ago had abused other people. It finally occurred to him that he wasn't the only one. And so he finally spoke out, but it really changed his life, basically.
Yeah, and I think there's such a risk that people take by speaking out, not just because like things could happen to them, the legal process is, it feels super out of their control, but like something we were talking about, like going back to grooming, right? They're also risking feeling like they're getting their, like a person that they care about or they think that they care about them in trouble, but because they're so groomed by this person, not understanding, you know, like actually this person's hurting you, but because of the way they've been groomed, they're scared that person's going to get in trouble, which is really sad. It's really sad to think about.
Yeah, this man, when he was a little boy, was scared that the teacher would do something to him. And the teacher had threatened his younger brother that if you don't stay quiet, I'll abuse your younger brother. Mm-hmm. So the teacher was using a lot of very abusive threats to keep him quiet. And then he went and tried to tell the principal. And so he got half of it out as a little 10-year-old. And then the teacher said, oh, no, Mr. So-and-so, so wonderful, it couldn't be happening. Don't say bad things about him. So it gets to, I think children do sometimes try to tell, but they're cut short by adults who don't believe that it could happen.
Sort of points to grooming by the entire culture, how a lot of people just have been groomed to not believe children or not know how to talk about these things, just because it's been so hush-hush for so many years. But yeah, that is another thing that is very sad, thinking about children coming forward and not being listened to. It's something adults need to be very conscious of.
Yeah, I feel like that, you know, I love talking about more like systemic things. And when I zoom out, I think about like how I feel like a lot of adults need that rewiring, right? Like our culture needs that rewiring of like, what's that phrase? Like, don't question your elders or like something along those lines, right? And why? But like, why, right? Like, shouldn't we be, I think, in especially to prevent, unfortunately, again, not the responsibility of survivors, but to help maybe prevent or for all of us to not be complicit as part of the cycle, rewire some of the adults or those phrasings where it's that children should be critical of other people, no matter who they are, and that it's important. You can still respect people and be critical of them.
Going on over here at the moment. Let's see. Back to the whole discussion, though. A question I have, online grooming's really come on very strong. So I am Valerie these last 10, 15 years. And I think that's added to the cultural grooming that you're talking about. You're mentioning, so it's easier in some ways to talk about cultural grooming. And we get sidetracked onto it. But a big part of that is so much of that has gone on in these last years, and we've been witness to it.
It's almost like these people can't escape because there's so many different ways to reach out on social media. And I think just with assisting Lynn with some of the cases, I've seen a lot of teachers or, you know, abusers reaching out through all different types of social media. Person can block an abuser on one platform, but then have them pop up on another platform. So it's kind of like this very incessant behavior that really isn't okay. And it's hard to avoid. And it's not the other person's fault, because we're in a world where it's like, if you're not on social media, you can kind of be disconnected from people. So it is kind of isolating. And it's like makes it very hard to escape.
And it again normalizes it.
Yes.
On social media. If it's out there, people believe it. You know, that's part of the grooming. We've been groomed to believe that stuff is true, you know. But there's what they're saying about kids who are abused now, 80% are groomed heavily through online sexual grooming at the same time that the abuser is grooming them in person. You know, so often, you know, let's say a teacher uses online grooming to complement the child, to begin this whole process and to initiate and support those connections. I think it's really increased grooming on the online world because you have more access. You have more access to children. They get their, you know, Instagram, Snapchat, all of this stuff early. and they start it, they get their cell phone number, and parents don't check on these things. They really don't. So they don't realize that the teacher's, you know, texts are really overtures that are grooming the child. It's an amazing area that's been neglected. I mean, there's awareness of it, but it's not awareness. The thought is these online groomers are somebody distant, not that it might be your coach or your child's teacher who you don't check their texts, really.
And I always find this area super fascinating, like social media and technology, how it impacts relationships in general. I think Lynn, I've shared with you, I did my thesis on it. It was just, it's super interesting. But this also makes me wonder, I watched this documentary called Swiped. It's on HBO or HBO Max or something like that. But they talk about how dating apps have changed maybe some of the dating landscape. And this makes me think also about like Instagram and all these other places where you can like things or emoji reactions to things, and how things like that, I think, can hit those dopamine centers. Like, so I think there's also something biological going on when kids are, you know, have like put a post up, and I wonder what's going on for them internally biologically when these people who are grooming them are liking these things. Like, is that why grooming has become so much easier in some ways? Because there's also this biological effect that could be happening. It's always a question I wondered. And yeah.
You know, I wonder that too. So I really don't know that, because, you know, it does appear that, you know, they talk about how the addiction works, and addiction sets up these rapid feedback kind of things. And, you know, they point out that video games are addictive. So you wonder if you're getting 40, 50 compliments a night from your teacher, does that set up a similar pattern? You know, because I've looked at these grooming sexting that go to kids who are being abused. Mm-hmm. I've maybe seen 40 or 50 of these patterns. And you really look at the amount of input. On average, when a child's being sexually groomed, it can run about 50 a day. So that's a huge input that is feeding something in the brain and maybe is setting up a biological response, you know, within the child.
I think that's what makes it so tricky to sort of scold the abusers and catch them in the act, because it is a lot of these subtle little things that maybe other people, when they hear about it, don't take it as seriously, like the child going to the principal, like you just mentioned.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's so many little things that people aren't going to go to jail for, sort of stuff. But it's so criminal that these people can kind of get away with liking a child's post. Like these people who have more power and in control of these children need to understand certain boundaries, and that's not okay to continue this personal relationship outside of the school setting. They're supposed to be their teacher, and it's their job to not abuse their students.
It is their job, but you know, to not abuse students. But we're talking about how everybody around them's been groomed not to see it.
Yes.
So you have the abusing teachers, and you have the other teachers saying, "Oh, they're great teachers."
Right.
You know, so everybody's got to be aware of the red flags.
Yeah.
Everybody's got to be asking questions, thinking, are those teachers possibly grooming me? Could I be groomed?
Yeah.
You know, because we could all be groomed.
Yeah.
You know, we really can be groomed.
Being complimented as a red flag.
Yes.
That's interesting.
Complimented, extra time spent with you or with your child if this is going on. Good things, gifts, you know, that are out of proportion to the relationship.
Yeah.
You know, so these are all the extra time, the compliments, the gifts. These are the things that draw people into this. I think also behavior in the kids, you know, when they're acting up. The kids show they're being groomed, because grooming is abusive, by having all kinds of behavioral problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and several things came up. Like, one of the things that, you know, I'm thinking about is, it's not just one single event. Like Lynn, you made a list of things, right? Like, if several of these things are present, then it's something to even like maybe put like a yellow flag about, to just like see what's happening there. Because especially in the adult dating world, right? Like, you're gonna see this. I know in my training with RTS, with Rape Trauma Services, that's one of the things that they mentioned, because they're like, yeah, now you're gonna be hyper-vigilant about all of these things. And it can almost feel super confusing, because you're like, okay, wait, is this person trying to abuse me? Or do they really just want to compliment me because they like me? And so it's important, I think, to look at all of the different factors and variables that, you know, Lynn, you listed, and to monitor, right? Like, just keep an eye out. And then the other thing that you mentioned, Lynn, which was interesting when I was working at RTS, again, when I was working with the girls at juvenile hall, one of the things that they mentioned to us was to see if there's any shift in how they dress, because sometimes that can indicate that they're trying to look better for staff or someone that they might be having an inappropriate relationship with. I mean, they could be looking different for, you know, peers their age, but like, if you're incarcerated, you're not going anywhere, right? So what's going on there? And it could be, you know, the boys at juvenile hall too, but just something to keep an eye out for. And I think that's also important, not to just, you know, for parents or caregivers to be automatically thinking, oh, they're being abused, but just kind of looking at like, okay, what's causing the change in their behavior and their appearance? But yeah, that's what it made me think of when you were talking about that.
Well, no, what you're saying, I see it with kids who are being abused. There is a change in appearance. You know, often facial expression is sadder, they're less powerful. You know, they don't have the energy. And then they do change how they dress. And it can be bizarre. They start wearing a weird t-shirt that says, use me, or something like that. You know, I mean, it's that overt. But if you're not thinking that way, you know, that my child could be abused, or this little girl or boy I'm taking care of could be abused, you don't notice it. You know, you miss the signs that this is happening. Yeah.
I'm always wary of places that say, oh, that doesn't happen here. I'm like,
Well, you mentioned dating apps. So when I was dating like 20 years ago, my brief foray into it in middle life, I actually had, you know, I'm dating as an analyst, child psychiatrist, and I had two abusers call me or text me, you know, online, you meet them up and happen. And they were abusive. You know, they tried to start with heavy compliments. Oh, you're a doctor. You're this, that. Then you must like, it leads to it. Within a couple of texts, you're into their abuse. I could see it coming, you know, and then they text heavy, you know, with the whole thing. But I think if you're not informed about that, you don't realize this is what's happening. You're being groomed into this process. So online dating is a risk for this.
It really is. I think I have so many conversations with my like adult female identified clients about dating apps, and just how there's a lot of education that goes into the work that I'm doing with them, because a lot of them, I think there's not enough education about how dating apps should be consumed. And it's so important.
And you're opening yourself up to meeting people. So you're somewhat receptive. You're maybe not asking those questions, Soy.
Absolutely.
And there you are, and you're ready. So look for the clues. A lot of attention, a lot of compliments.
Yeah.
Too many compliments.
I always want to encourage people to like trust their bodies, right? Like if they feel like something is off, then like listen to it. You don't have to immediately act on it unless it feels dangerous in the moment, but like listen to it, check in with yourself, right? And ask like what's happening, what's going on, why do I feel this way? What was going on in this interaction with someone that made me feel this way? And can I have a conversation with this person about it? Because I think that's another big thing, right? Like, can you talk to this person and how are they going to receive it? Can be such a determining factor of like what their pattern of behavior can be in the future.
And that's the keeping the secret. If you can't talk to them and you're supposed to hold it back, that's a really big red flag, whether you're in a relationship or a dating app or anything, you know, a little child, you know, so that's, it brings us back to that book,
yeah.
Getting your secrets out there.
Yes.
You know, it's really important. Yeah. There are bad secrets to keep.
Mm-hmm.
You
know? Mm-hmm.
I think we've really covered grooming today. I mean, that's better than any other discussions about it. So, you know, I think we're on target with it. I think the whole series kind of complements the different parts of it. We're talking about complicity. We're also talking about our treating abusers will be our last one and what that entails and the courage that entails mm-hmm. on their part to come forward and get treatment mm-hmm. on our part to be willing to do it. You know, mm-hmm. I think about the future talk we're going to have about that and how it's hard now for docs and those who engage in giving abortions. They're mm-hmm. being kind of scapegoated mm-hmm. and, seen in a negative light. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, I think treating abusers, those of us who engage in the treatment, that's also seen in a fairly negative light. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know what you think, Soy, about that.
Yeah, I think I've been, for the most part, lucky that I've been encouraged or maybe well supported by people in the practices that I'm in, that I am able to do the work that I do with people who have abused others. But I'm not going to lie that there is a part of me that feels a little fear and worry that like people might say, how can you possibly feel compassion for people like that? But I honestly, when I've done the work that I have done working with survivors for as long as I have, I feel like it's because of that I can have maybe compassion for the other piece of it too, because it's not that simple. As we were saying earlier, this is a very complicated area.
And what you're bringing up, I think this whole series is about really having compassion. You know, for everyone in this whole sequence that gets pulled in, the kids, the parents, the teachers, you know, and looking at abusers, as we know, many of them have been pulled in, they've been groomed and pulled into this pattern, and they're now all involved in normalizing a very dangerous kind of power over struggle with people, you know, but we can have compassion for them too, and for ourselves, because we have to do this work, and it's sure not easy.
Very true. Yeah. I'm not excited to go back for my vacation, but also it's important.
Well, the things that you both started with us are really important. They're really important. I'm taking mine next week. Okay. That'll be today.
All right. Thank y'all. Come on. Let's talk about